96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Disappointment for many in Baltimore after the third Freddie Gray trial, discontentment for Democrats on Capitol Hill, and affirming affirmative action by the highest court in the land. We have a lot to talk about tonight at the Reporters Roundtable. My guests are D.C. Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, Dr. Nyambi Carter, Professor of Political Science at Howard University, and Deborah Simmons, reporter for The Washington Times. We also have on the phone Charles Robinson, a reporter for Maryland Public Television. Lots to talk about tonight. Give us a call if you have a question or a comment at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can also comment on my Facebook page at facebook.com/Harold Fisher. Harold Fisher, WHUR, or follow us on Twitter at Daily Drum, WHUR. Okay, let's start off with what's going on in Baltimore. Charles, got to ask you that. Do you have any idea what's happening at Penn and North? I know there was a gathering of protesters, and that's the same place where those the heart of the riots and protests last year.
Yeah, at this point, things are pretty calm. You know, yes, people have been boisterous, but nothing like we had last year. Probably the latest bit of information came from attorney Billy Murphy, who is representing the Gray family. And they said they still had confidence in state's attorney Marilyn Mosby, who some considered a savior of the city after she indicted the six police officers. But today's verdict was expected almost, because the case that they built up against Officer Cesar Goodson, who was the van driver that took Freddie Gray to the police station, and the van in which he suffered all of his injuries. The judge basically said the state had not proven its case. And I've been through all of these trials, Harold, and there's a pattern that you see. And that is, when the judge starts asking questions and you can't answer those questions, guess what? You're up the creek without a paddle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Delegate Holmes Norton, you're a legal scholar. Your thoughts about the outcome of this trial?
Well, first, let me say that this was trial by a judge.
Mm-hmm. A bench trial, yeah.
A bench trial. There's only been one jury trial, and none of these, and all three have failed. The prosecution threw the book at this man who was charged with murder, second-degree murder, apparently in the hope that something would stick. Mm. I mean, there were five or six different kinds of charges against them, and none of them stuck. Even though we had a judge, they were obviously afraid of facing a jury. I am pleased, though, that Baltimore has decided that when a verdict like this comes out, you don't react by defiling your city. I can understand the concern, because the concern is that it looks like no matter what you do, a cop simply will not be found guilty. Mm-hmm. And I think it is the cumulative effect of the failure to generally, or almost always, find that a policeman had done something wrong. And I must say, sometimes even when there's a video of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the thing about that video is that no one could really tell how fast that police van was going. And that was one of the issues that the prosecution had. And that's what Judge Barry Williams said earlier today, that the prosecution just didn't prove their point.
Yeah. And I think the issue becomes, then who is responsible? Because that young man was alive and well prior to this interaction, and now he's dead. And we have had three trials, one hung jury, two bench trials, and now we're about to have another three. Mm-hmm. And it seems that nothing
and actually
is going
we're
to
have four right? Because the first one was a mistrial.
Right. So they're going to have another trial.
Right. So we've had a mistrial we've had, and two acquittals. So essentially for the prosecution, they're 0-3.
Right. And in a way, Marilyn Mosby is starting to look like Marsha Clark in the O.J. trial, where she says and is confident that she has the evidence to be able to mount a conviction. And I'm glad Delegate Norton put it this way, trying to get something to stick as if she weren't sure. But there was a grand jury indictment. And if I'm not mistaken, grand juries decide whether a crime has likely been committed and who the person or people were who were responsible for that. And for this to be so incongruous with what the judge has decided in these two bench trials and what the jury decided in the first case against Officer William Porter. Mm-hmm. That's partially what's so befuddling to people who are merely looking and coming in momentarily every now and again from the mm-hmm. outside. What is the problem? To know that the judge is asking questions, as Supreme Court justices do, that they're asking questions, mm-hmm. perhaps that now is going to have Prosecutor Mosby look at, have her team, because mm-hmm. not just her,
right.
have her team relook at the case and re-strategize and not just think it's one trial. That these are separate trials for very separate reasons.
But I think it's unfair, though, to leave it at Mosby's feet, and I'm glad you raised that point, because she did what she could. She charged the cases, she brought the cases, but she never assured anybody a conviction. And I think that's the part of it that becomes really difficult, because it was such a strong show when she came out and said there will be indictments, and now that there have been no convictions, it seems like, you know, she's fallen down in the job, but she never promised.
What does that mean? Her glass is now half empty?
Or well, hold on. I've got to go to the phone lines, because there's some other issues. We've got a lot to get to today, and we've got plenty of time to talk about it, but I want to make sure we get this stuff out. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Wilmont, calling from Howard County. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you know? First of all, it's a privilege to speak to y'all. Hey, Delegate Norton, I've been riding with you that long, girl. That's how I stood there. You're a delegate. But I'm going to tell you something. That's how far I've been going for her. But I'm going to tell y'all something. Nobody's asking nobody in law enforcement these questions. I'm in law enforcement. I'm in the federal side. Nobody's not telling nobody that Freddie Gray's record was as long as my arm and your arm put together. He was known for combating the police. He was known for fighting the police. So my thing is like this. Why don't people take the time and go out there and talk to some of these people that are, these officers that are ripping and running these streets and responding to these 911 calls, ask me how it is. A matter of fact, Delegate Norton, I think you did it one time. You did a ride along with MPD before.
Yeah.
So I did get out with MPD and see how it is to patrol up and down these streets.
Well, yeah.
Even though Mr. Howard just mentioned about how D.C. just caught a dude, a little boy with an AK-47.
Yeah.
So am I supposed to take the time to worry about what his medical condition is? No, all I know is he became combative and he had to be taken into custody.
Well, we don't even know that.
Why don't somebody take the time and pull this man's criminal record?
Well, Wilmont, let me say this, because you mentioned two things, and then I want Delegate Norton to respond, and then we want to move forward. But, first of all, should you be concerned about someone's medical condition? Yes. Yes, absolutely.
If you take someone into custody, hold on, let me finish.
If you take somebody into custody, the aim is to arrest and bring them to justice, not execute them. And that certainly is the issue, because if Freddie Gray had lived after his arrest, we would not know who Freddie Gray is.
Look, his criminal record is irrelevant.
Is irrelevant. That's the other point. Thank you.
You know, if he killed somebody in police custody, you have the duty to deliver him and you said it, Harold.
Alive.
Not execute him. But the other thing you said didn't take into account, the man had handcuffs on. He was shackled. So it's not as if he could have acted up very much. And that is part of why they went after this particular driver, because he had the training to know how to have him sit and how to have him buckled in.
But let's talk about that for one issue. In the state of Maryland, if I am driving and, Delegate, you are in my passenger seat and you're not wearing a seatbelt and I get pulled over, I get cited.
Because you're the driver.
Because I'm the driver.
He was cited, and he was cited. That's why he was, in fact, held to be the... But the fact is that that wasn't all.
Mm-hmm.
They said that he should have assured that this man was secured in and that he did not. Mm-hmm. And he did not. Look, this was, and the judge implied this, if he didn't say it straight out, for civil negligence, they could have gotten him. They could have gotten the state.
Mm.
This is a criminal matter, and you know what it takes to do that.
Right. Real quick, Charles, a comment from you before I move forward. Charles, can you hear me? Let's get Charles back on the line. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to move to another issue. Obviously, we will be revisiting the Freddie. Yeah, Charles, can you hear me? Okay, let's get Charles back on the line. We are going to be revisiting this case, but we've got some other issues that I definitely want to touch on, and we'll be going back and forth over these issues during the course of this conversation. Unprecedented, some could argue, historic action by Democrats on Capitol Hill yesterday. Delegate, how are you feeling?
I tell you,
when we sat in
during the Civil Rights Movement, at least we sat in seats.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting in on the hard House floor, now that's something else.
But let's say you didn't have dogs, you didn't have water hoses here, you had pizza on the floor, you had AIDS.
Tell it,
Why did it stop at 26 hours?
We had made our point. The House had stopped business. It didn't mean to stop business until perhaps the weekend. It had to call off business Thursday and Friday. And we were sitting there with 80% to 90%, according to which poll you read, of the American people saying, for example, no buy. In other words, if you cannot fly because your name is on the terror watch list, you shouldn't be able to buy a gun. So that almost says itself. And yet we couldn't get this brought to the House floor because, you know, unlike the Senate, where you can maneuver if you're in the minority to get things on the floor in the House. And here I'm not complaining about the rules, but whoever is the majority controls what bills go to the House floor. So there was great frustration that we would have to go home and say, look, nothing I can do about it. Why don't you just talk to the Republican majority?
Mm-hmm. Deborah, talk to me about the optics of that action yesterday.
The optics were very interesting because I can remember sit-ins from the 60s and 70s, whether it was for anti-Vietnam protests and the war there in Indochina, or whether it was for the civil rights movement. But you know what I wanted somebody to desperately say? This is what we're going to do in Chicago, Atlanta, D.C., New York, Philadelphia, L.A., where folks are killing one another on the street. We're going to sit in with one another and use this exact same
sit in energy. Against the criminals?
Sit in.
Against who?
With one another.
Where?
To stand united and show we are united about the crime and the genocide that's going on in American
cities. Every time there is a shooting in D.C., people gather to do just
no,
that.
No, I'm not saying they don't.
Are you talking about
he asked about the optics.
Right.
It presents a fantastic picture when you're united together, as we were during the civil rights movement, in the anti-war protests, burning bras, feminism, the right to vote, statehood, and all these other issues. I'm talking about human life, as opposed to trying to get somebody with some other ideology trying to get me to do what they want me to do.
I need to take a break. Hold on, Charles. We're going to get to you. I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this discussion. We're going to talk about Freddie Gray. We're going to talk about the sit-in on Capitol Hill. We're going to talk about affirmative action and a victory for the admissions process at the University of Texas. And of course, we're going to talk to our listeners at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you're on the phone, I believe that's Marissa from Baltimore. And Don, calling from D.C., do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds.